Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you may be listening. This is Cliff, your host of Earth Ancients, startling new discoveries from our planet's distant past. It is Saturday, and I'm looking out my window here. I'm in Oakland, California, and it's a little overcast. We've had a lot of hot weather lately, but it is still a good day. I am really excited today. I have our guest today is someone who I've known for probably two decades, and the subject that she'll be talking about today is something that I've considered critically important. And as a program director for a national conference 20 years ago, I was the program was called Whole Life Expo, and we traveled about 6 months out of the year to different parts of the country and featured probably 100 to 150 regional and national and international speakers. And these were all usually hand-picked individuals, and they were picked because of their messaging, their ability to convey solid material on subjects like ancient history, astrology, Native American traditions, and then there was things like psychic awareness and personal growth and health. But during that time, I became quite close with a number of elders, Mayan elder, a gentleman named Humbats Min, Wallace Black Elk, Thomas Binyaka, who is has passed since and who was a Hopi elder. And they discussed Earth at a time when there was a major event. And because there are no documents left to us other than geological remains of a catastrophe, the people who did keep an oral tradition were these native elders, and the material was handed down over centuries. So when a book comes out that actually discusses this, the trauma that is associated with this cataclysmic event, it's something to really pay attention to. And my guest today is Barbara Han Clow. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Barbara in a minute here, but the importance of understanding this trauma is I think, and we'll talk in detail about it in a minute, is critical to understand. So we've heard from Robert Schock last week, and Robert discussed what he understands to be the evidence of a cataclysmic event. Velikovsky writes about it in World and Collision, and of course his work is somewhat outdated because there's more scientific evidence of a catastrophe. But it's important to understand the effects and how we can release those effects and move into the future. So Barbara Han Clow is an internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, author, and Mayan calendar researcher. Her numerous books include The Mayan Code, The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Liquid Light of Sex, and The Mayan Code. The book that I read, I think it's at least 5 to 7 years ago, was Catastrophobia. And the updated expanded edition is called Awakening the Planetary Mind. That's the actual book that I posted on the Facebook page. The subtitle is Beyond the Trauma of the Past to a New Era of Creativity. And this is what one author wrote about this book. In The Awakening of the Planetary Mind, Barbara Han Clow tells the story of who we are, who we really are, and how we got here. Never before has there been a telling of history from such an exponential point of view, so pertinent that it ties our global present-day conscious existence with all its political, academic, and religious dogma to a great catastrophe of our remote past and an ecological golden age that existed before. A truly remarkable accomplishment and fascinating book. I couldn't put it down. That's from Edward Malkowski, who's the author of Ancient Egypt, 39,000 BC. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hi, Cliff. Good morning, in my case.
Good morning. Yes. The book really is fascinating, and it touches on so many really, really important points. We only have an hour, but I do want to cover some of the contents in there. Let's start with this. What do you feel was the event, was the major event 13,000 years ago, based on your research? What was the catastrophe?
Yeah, in my opinion, the event actually covers a little bit of a range of time, probably from about 15,000 years ago up until 11,500 years ago, when we had a rising series of disturbances in the whole solar system itself. And where this information comes from is actually from the Cherokee records. And in my case, I'm a Cherokee record keeper. There are different there's different groups of us who do different things with wisdom traditions. And in my case, I was trained by my Cherokee grandfather as a record keeper. And so when I was a young girl, this is from age 3 to age 17 when he died, he passed the Cherokee records to me about the story of the cataclysm, and especially the importance of the awakening of this event in people's minds at this time. Now, my grandfather passed the tradition to me, passed over his children. He had five children, because he knew that I would be alive at this moment in time, and obviously my parents and other aunts and uncles are gone at this point. So the source of this information is actually from the Cherokee records, and of course I'm in relation to other Cherokee record keepers at this time. And then in my own personal career, I became a publisher, and at Bear & Company for 20 years doing acquisitions. And then while I was at the company, finally a book came to me that exactly matched my grandfather's records that he had passed to me. And this is a book by a couple of scientists, J.B. Dallaire and Dr. Allen. And so when this book came to me, we published an American edition of it. It was first published in England. And then I went into research work with the two authors of the book. Their book was called, let's see if I can remember at this point. I'll think of it in a minute because we changed the title at Bear. It was called Cataclysm, and then there was a subtitle.
Right.
So in my case, I turned right around to these authors and said, hey, I want to work with you I said, you wrote the scientific evidence for this cataclysm, which occurred over a period of 2,500 years, basically, but the most intense part of it was 11,500 years ago. And this is when we see just a total dichotomy all over the planet of, you know, by means of geological and sacred site information. And so my book is really an analysis of the scientific data, but my focus is what did this do to us? What happened to the human race as a result of almost literally being destroyed 11,500 years ago? So that's what it's about.
Okay. So that's a good start point. So I think there's a good section in your book where you actually describe this maritime culture that was existing at the time of the cataclysm. Can you give us just some highlights of what you discovered in your research, what this society, the world was like prior to the events of 9,500?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. And I concentrated, of course, on what was probably going on from about 20,000 years ago up until 11,500 years ago, because that would be the largest record that we have. But this book actually goes back 100,000 years, and it's actually working with the idea of the global maritime civilization, which is also so nicely described by Graham Hancock. My book is like attempting to not only describe that civilization, which was a civilization just like us at the current moment, where everybody liked to live by the sea. That's just how it is on this planet. They were a maritime sailing civilization, and we have a great deal of evidence even of their boats. And so the problem is that when the cataclysm occurred, after the cataclysm was over, the sea rose 400 to 500 feet after the cataclysm. Mm-hmm. And that's not New Age woo-woo, that's a fact. And so,
right.
In other words, all of their maritime cities were wiped out. And so one of the things I did is I had the artist draw a version of one of those cities just so people could imagine it. And so we think they lived in caves, and we think that all they had done was draw cave drawings on the walls, when in fact mm-hmm. those caves were their ritual locations, and they actually did have fairly highly developed cities. And, of course, the book presents a great deal of evidence for that.
Okay. And I haven't read the updated version of the book, but did you find any evidence of technology used in that early society? I mean, that would be around the time of Plato's Atlantis.
Right.
So, and Atlantis has always been described as a technological-based society.
Yeah, and there's a lot of evidence for that. And one of the best researchers, a couple of great researchers on the technology are Malkowski and also Chris Dunn, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Left Brain isn't operating very much for me because I love the way you ask questions. But there have been some great proofs, absolute proofs of very, very advanced technology before 12,000
yes.
years ago. And, of course, I cover that material again. But the important thing to understand about their technology was they were using technology differently than we are now. They were using technology
right.
for energy and healing. And that's why, at this point, with the planet in the kind of condition it's in now, that's why this recovery of the information that these people attained is of critical importance to us now. It's going to be important for our survival.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a chapter in your book, and you please help me with this word. You describe the bicameral
brain. Right. Bicameral
brain.
Yeah.
And that is what you have uncovered was the mindset of this civilizations, right? Is that how that is described?
Well, I brought in this is the research of Julian James. And James.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought in the issue of the called The Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. It was a really popular book back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the book mm-hmm. was based on the idea that we used to be a bunch of crazy woo-woo psychic people, and then we got smart and we activated the left brain and we became mm-hmm. logical. And
okay.
in fact, from my point of view, this was a breakdown rather than a breakthrough. So that material is covered in there because one of the ways that we can best understand what has happened to us in terms of the damage, now let's assume that cataclysm really happened. Then what mm-hmm. I'm saying is because it happened, we are a multi-traumatized species. And then getting into how the brain operates is extremely important. Because what seems to have happened to us as a species is the memory of the cataclysm is located in our right brains, and our right brains are very non-local in terms of time, so it's very hard to access this. And then over a period of 10,000 years, we've developed the left brain, so it's become a stronger and stronger, more dominant part of our consciousness. And I'm saying in Awakening the Planetary Mind that we developed that strong left brain in order to kind of put a cap on the right brain so that we couldn't remember what happened, because what happened is so horrendous. And so now mm-hmm. we're in the middle of this awakening moment where the right brain is beginning to gain ascendancy again, because it has to. It's the only way that we can live in synchronicity with our planet and not be destroyers here. And so, one of the things I'm the most interested in is as this left brain mentality breaks down, it's very cataclysmic for people, just looking at some of the news that's gone on in the last month or two, because the left brain is not going to be able to control this planet anymore. Yeah, so you
yes.
see how that operates? So that cataclysm
yeah.
is lurking in there, and then people who are extremely left brain, scientific types, especially, are attempting to keep a cap on it. And this is what Velikovsky was after 50 years ago. I was a researcher with Velikovsky. And what he was after, because he was a Jungian analyst, he was after this whole issue of how our brains were functioning in relationship to this issue. Like one of my favorite books by Velikovsky is called Mankind in Amnesia, which didn't get around very far, but it's a brilliant work showing how our brains are attempting to shut down any cataclysmic memory.
Oh, so we've had a little bit of technical difficulty there. I am going to call Barbara back. The audio system just dropped our guest, so I will call her now.
Hello.
Sorry about that.
You
Hi, Barbara.
What?
Sorry about that.
Well, you want to know what?
Dropped.
This is what happened on Coast to Coast a few weeks ago. The minute I get into the real issue, there's somebody out there who doesn't want people to know about this. So hopefully we'll stay on. I'm getting used to it, you know. No, it's true. This is the big secret. This is how the global elite controls the human population. It's all based.
You know, it's very odd. I have never, ever had been dropped like this from any station. So I apologize, but thank you for the insight.
No, but at the same time, it happens to me all the time. Remember at the expo when I was giving a lecture and I shut down a whole building for 20 minutes, all the power went out? Do you remember that?
I'll tell you. No, I don't. Yeah. I should know that because
In San Francisco.
I probably do remember, but I probably went into panic mode trying to figure out what to do.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Program
see, this is, this is also a Pleiadian issue. The Pleiadian energy is very, very powerful. And so that's why it happens, I think. It's just a frequency. But hopefully, we can stay on.
Yes. Well,
Explain to you. Yeah.
Let's continue on. I want to get into what you know about the Earth-centric people. And we read from Casey that the Atlanteans and the people that lived in neighboring countries were Earth-centric. They understand the Earth. I know for a fact that having studied with the Maya were extremely Earth-centric. And now, after research from John Burke in his book on measuring energetic fields, they understood it so well. They built pyramids over these energetic fields to amplify them. And he didn't actually get into the level of their use. He felt they were for a seed propagation and development.
Yeah.
But I believe that it was actually used for human evolution, as well as I believe they did dimensional travel with that technology. So tell me what your feeling is on the prediluvian world.
Yeah. Well, the prediluvial culture or society on this planet was all interconnected by means of ley lines and vortexes and all the different energetic fields that activate the Earth. And these fields actually are very powerful in the second dimension, and that's my definition of nine dimensions, coming from alchemy of nine dimensions. And then what happens on the surface of the Earth is there are various power points and vortexes and ley lines. And before the cataclysm, the whole world was, the whole globe was networked by means of this energetic system. And the reason for this, as you've already intuited, is twofold. First of all, by relating strongly to the second dimension, which is the source of the elementals and the healing, it's possible for people to be completely healthy while they're alive in their bodies on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens with these power points is these are multidimensional portals which pick up frequencies and consciousness from many, many higher dimensions. And then after the cataclysm, there was an attempt to recover this system, because this was a system of global communication and global healing and global higher consciousness. And so we have many, many cultures attempting to recover the system, especially I covered the Egyptian culture in detail because they have done such a good job of it. And so as we as we come into the megalithic era and into the period where people started building standing stones and dolmens and different markings all over the planet, they were marking the planet like an acupuncture system. And part of the reason they were, you know, they did some incredible work at that time. This is 8,000 to about maybe 4,000 years ago. Mainly to heal the planet, maybe mainly to recover this energetic force, which is actually what keeps us healthy and happy on the planet. And this is what I think we're headed for. But I think we're going to do it differently. I think every culture does things differently.
So are you saying that that the Egyptians developed or accessed the naturally occurring Earth energetics to project into the atmosphere to kind of do a global healing, or how would you describe their the techniques they use for mass healing?
Well, I think their attempt was global, because notice where they're located. They're located right at the geodetic center of the planet. And so, as we all know, they build a system of temples and pyramids. And there's a lot of different theories about what these pyramids were being used for, and I pretty much embrace all of them. Like, in my work, I can see how these pyramids could be technological and producing power, because, after all, we live in the third, what I call the third dimension, linear space and time, and we need to have power. But I also think that pyramids and the whole Egyptian technology was also accessing higher dimensions. And this is very important, because if you're going to use power, ideally, you do have some kind of higher dimensional connection, and that's what we're missing right now. We have tremendous abuse of power at this time because the connection isn't there. But it was also, it was global. It was definitely global. We find evidence for these kinds of systems everywhere. They just function. But the Egyptians were the real masters of multidimensional technology, in my opinion.
Well, we're both friends and fans of Humboldt's Men, who speaks quite a bit about the Mayan tradition. I've been down to Yucatan quite a bit and have been through the jungles and actually seen a number of pyramids that seem to have more of a focus towards something other than observing the heavens. Do you feel, I feel that they had an understanding similar to the Egyptians. Maybe there was a collection and a transferring and a sharing of knowledge.
Yeah, they'd be the first ones to say that they got the information from the Egyptians, because that's what they tell me. And so they're a newer, obviously a more recent culture. We only can really go back to the Olmecs, which is about 1500 BC. So therefore, the Mayans were major carriers from the Egyptians, but more importantly, from my point of view, they also were masters of the Vedic tradition. And after this came through to me, and my grandfather told me that, I checked that with Humboldt's Men, and he said yes, that was true. So the Vedic tradition is extremely interesting, because then we're going back to 9500 BC, 11,500 years ago. We're getting back to the point of the cataclysm, when the Vedic civilization still had the time codes and the time records, which they did a beautiful job maintaining. So the Mayan civilization is very important, because it retained the Egyptian pyramid knowledge, and it also brought in a remarkable knowledge about time codes and calendars. And the reason those are important is that's the tracking of evolution on Earth. In other words, the whole issue of all of the periods of time in the Earth. And that's where I've adopted Dr. Carl Kalaman's research on the calendar, because what I like about Carl's work is he's going back 16.5 billion years. And that's coming from a stele at Coba in the Yucatan. And I've been there, and there actually is a stele in the Yucatan that goes back 16.5 billion years. Amazing.
What part of, because I've been to Coba a few times, is it is it close to the entrance, or where is that, Steve?
Well, let me see. What I can tell you is there's the tallest pyramid at Coba just soars up with these incredibly steep steps. It's almost impossible to climb it. And the stele that has the record that Kalaman has analyzed is kind of to the right-hand side of the just before you go up the stairs, there's this little stele. And my husband was with me, and he happened to notice the plaque on it. And we found it by accident, in other words. So this is called Cobostel 1.
Cobostel 1. For our audience
that
doesn't know what a stele is,
standing carved stone.
It's a standing stone. It's a marker. Some of them weigh, a couple thousand pounds. But they're usually markers to designate a king or a time period. And the one you're talking about, the stele you're speaking about, it sounds like it's is it a partial calendar, or is it just
a
marker
calendar
for time?
It's a calendar.
Okay, so it is a calendar.
Yeah, it is a calendar, and you also will find those on the steles at Tikal. Also, in other words, you're absolutely right. Some of them are for markings of kingly issues, and some for battles, some for like gods and goddesses, and then some of them are calendars.
Yes, yes. Akoba is a fascinating place. It's so big that when you get to the entrance, they have bicycles that you can rent to ride all the way through.
Yeah.
many miles.
It's a lovely place. It's a lovely place.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
So the pre-Diluvian culture was more Earth-centric. We've established that. They had Earth-centric technology. It wasn't eating up the natural resources of like a petrochemical corporation does today, though there are evidences of digging for copper and things like that, but it hasn't depleted. We don't have evidence of depletions from that period of time. So then this asteroid or huge body comes, either hits the Earth, we don't really quite know, or comes very close and disrupts Earth's gravitational field and basically destroys a good portion of the population of our planet. The survivors or the people that are left go underground in some cases. Others who are on the surface are either irradiated and die a slow, painful death. There is some evidence of them going to parts of the Earth that are not as damaged as other parts. And what's left, Barbara? What do we have left? We have a people who are traumatized. So can you tell us about the trauma that you understand that we are living with now?
Yeah, I actually can, because I also did a book called The Mind Chronicles, where I traveled into 100 of my past lives, and I actually managed to access a past life from right after the cataclysm.
And, oh, my God.
Right afterwards, I was a young girl and started helping the tribe recover, in this case, knowledge about how to grow food. And so the first thing, I believe that the issue of what the kind of condition we were in after the cataclysm is actually the best explanation we have for why agriculture started. Because as far as we can tell, before the cataclysm, the global maritime civilization were much more hunter-gatherer and horticultural types. And that's just coming from basic paleo analysis. And then we all know, agriculture started somewhere between 8 and 9,000 BC. And so outside of my own past life and all that, we have plenty of evidence to show that where culture really changed after the cataclysm was agriculture. Now, agriculture was not a pleasant thing for hunter-gatherer and horticultural societies. If you go back into modern horticultural and hunter-gatherer societies, people only work about 3 hours a day. People have this idea that they had to work all the time, but agriculture is what creates all of the work. And so as soon as agriculture got started and village life got started, then what happened is humans had to spend a much greater amount of their time growing and caring and storing food. And that's okay. That's just a stage in our evolution. But I do think it's the best explanation for what triggered the inception of agriculture on our planet.
Are you saying that because the animal life was wiped out, they were forced to become grain growers and food development in that form, or are you just saying that's a natural outcrop of post-cataclysm?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. First of all, there was a tremendous amount of flooding and a tremendous amount of destruction of the planet itself. And so it was extremely difficult to grow anything after this event occurred. And, of course, a lot of the animals were wiped out. We know that. This is called, in geology, this is the Pleistocene extinctions. And a whole
right.
group of animals were wiped out, and a whole new group of mammals and animals started developing. So what I'm suggesting is people had to go to extreme means in order to survive. And one of the things that they did was they started creating agriculture and started trying to work with the soil because there was so much disturbance. And I also
okay.
think that the whole ley line sacred site system was pretty much destroyed during the cataclysm, because as far as we can tell from the event itself, it was like an electromagnetic wipeout. It didn't, according to our theory, this was fragments coming from a supernova, the Vela supernova.
Right.
And they started leaving the Vela supernova in 15,000 BC, and then the impact on the solar system was 11,500 years ago. So what happened when these fragments got close enough to Earth is they disturbed the whole electromagnetic field of the Earth, which would have definitely disturbed all of the development of the ley lines and vortexes on the planet. In fact,
right.
Alan Dallaire think that the Earth at that point shattered, shattered totally, but split into an icosahedral sphere, which is a sphere with 20 triangular faces. And Alan and Dallaire are actually saying that this is the cause of plate tectonics on the planet. And this is a very interesting issue, because right now we're having such tremendous activation of the plate tectonics on the planet.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
But that point is post cataclysm, and that, in your estimation, and what I think is that's the restarting point where current science kind of focuses on human development, not prior to that. But that's basically the starting point. And they find cave paintings, they find all this kind of stuff. And then from there on, that's the start of our civilization.
That's right.
Which is fascinating, because the geological records and of course the megaliths that are left to us are much, much older than 9,500 BC or around that time period. So let's talk about.
And I'm actually, Cliff, I'm not sure about that.
Oh.
I think that the megalithic technology that's pretty much all over the planet was
mm-hmm.
developed between about 8,000, 9,000. Now there's older stuff, okay, but the majority
yeah.
of it, like Karnak and you know all the way up to Stonehenge, I think that technology developed in order to rebuild and restructure the vortex and ley line system of the planet. In other words, the nerve system of the planet in relationship to the human mind had been fractured. And I actually think the megalithic technology was the way that humankind rebuilt that connection with the Earth.
So you're suggesting that the survivors understood the natural energetic emanations from the Earth and built Stonehenge and these other standing structures to reconfigure the energetics?
Yes.
Or to use them? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and quite a few people have the same attitude. And there are megalithic sites that are a lot older than Stonehenge. Stonehenge is really starting to get into the civilizational realm, and this is where we get into the issues that Carl Coleman brought up with the Mayan calendar. That whole issue of the last 5,125 years is really the best dating for the patriarchal takeover. And so the civilization before that, the patriarchy started 3,150 BC, whatever it was, that civilization before that, that megalithic civilization, I think is more matriarchal and more Earth-centered and more connected with the Earth. And I also, in Awakening the Planetary Mind, I traced See, I took the megalithic civilization, and this is where I think you missed something right there, although you haven't read this latest version. And I tried to use the megalithic system to jump back to the system that was there before the cataclysm, because it's actually the doorway. So some of the megalithic system is very, very ancient. Have you ever seen a dolmen as big as a hotel? Dolmens are those gigantic rocks that sit on three supporting rocks. You see a lot of them.
I've seen pictures of them, but I haven't seen one up close.
Well, man, I'll tell you, go stand next to one of those. Those things must weigh 1,000 tons. And somebody managed back, most of the dolmens, they date them to 8 or 9,000 BC. I don't think so. I think those are the ones that go back before the cataclysm. And I think they were so huge that even the cataclysm didn't move them off their supports.
Well, it's funny because Burke, in his book on standing stones, actually does some readings on some of those dolmens, and he says that the readings go off the meter because they're just generating so much power. And he actually explains in one place in England, I can't remember the name of it, but he was very uncomfortable because he saw the meter registering off the chart, and he felt his whole body begin to vibrate.
Yeah, he might have gone into another dimension. He would have stayed with it. Yeah, I do that. I used to. I'm not traveling as much as I used to, but I used to go to sacred sites, and certain the more powerful ones, you can go out of body, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
You can ascend right into a higher plane. Oh, yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah, the only thing is you want to be able to get back in your body.
Yeah,
you want to leave.
It's a trust. actually, the great thing about those places, I think that they knew how to build those places so that you could come back as well as go out. Also, that would be a great way. That'd be a great way to go, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. It would be if you wanted to leave, you'd had enough of your body and you're ready to leave. But I always wonder, because I remember the first time I was in Chichen Itza, and I went on the pyramid, the El Castillo, and I went up to the very top, and I just began to have my, didn't go blind, but it was like blurred vision. I was vibrating, and it hit me so strongly that I had to stand at the very top. This is before they shut it off, and now you can't even climb it. They don't let you climb it, but I had to stay up there for an hour because I was so shifted. It was fascinating. At the time, it was fun.
Isn't that amazing?
But,
Chichen Itza El Castillo is actually in strong alignment with the Pleiades. So, and many, many of our indigenous cultures are very, very connected with the Pleiades. Like when I was a kid, my grandfather told me I was from the Pleiades. And unfortunately, he didn't tell me not to tell anybody else. And when I was in the first grade, and the teacher asked where you came from, and that started out my crazy. Yep, I said I'm from the Pleiades, and everything kind of got pretty screwed up in school from that point forward.
You're not supposed to tell the teacher that you see friends that no one else can see.
Yeah, but you know, this Pleiadian connection thing is really, really important because through the last 100,000 years, and awakening the planetary mind is really trying to bring back that sense of 100,000 years. I really, really do feel that that beings from the Pleiades, and I'm not talking about spaceships or anything like that. I'm just talking about beings who have the ability. There's strong evidence on this planet that Pleiadian beings may have really triggered a lot of the stages of evolution on the Earth, and that's why so many indigenous people revere them so much, because it would appear that they were real guides for a long, long time.
That's fascinating. Let's go back to the traumatic effects that you've discovered. What is it that you've detected in today's society that has been carried from the survivors of the devastation?
Yeah, this is a great, great question, because the book goes into that period in depth between 9,000 BC and about 6,000 BC, something like that, 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that people were so traumatized and had to struggle to such a degree just to survive that you could almost make a case for the idea that the ones who didn't survive were almost better off in a way. And so what we find in ancient records, including the Bible, are we find stories of fathers mating with their daughters just to perpetuate human civilization. We find all kinds of very bizarre stories about cannibalism and different things like that. And the reason I think this information is so important at this time is we're having a lot of people doing a lot of really strange things right now. And I think that the cataclysmic memory banks in our brains, I think that the inability to process the information and, you know, and heal yourself in relationship to it is actually the key to a lot of the issues that we're having with violence in modern society. In other words, we have this kind of atavistic background in the brain that's triggering a lot of really negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing some deviations from the norm. But, I mean, it's a racial memory. It's not something, unless we tap into this memory in our dreams, or how is it carried, how is something that happened thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago carried into our consciousness now? And what are, I mean, you're talking about some strange behaviors, but why is it important to heal? That's what I want to know.
Okay, this is called racial memory. And Freud did a great job on the issue of racial memory, establishing that people actually can remember through the whole chain of the generations that memories are carried. So now in our current moment, we have a science operating called epigenetics. And epigenetics has actually proven scientifically that that traumatic events in a person's racial line are actually carried through generation by generation. This was based on some studies attempting to understand what was going on with the grandchildren of people who were in the Holocaust. So at this point, this is considered to be scientific. Somehow, memory of traumatic events does carry down genetically from the parents through the children. So this is just hard science. There's no reason not to think this isn't true. And the reason I've never doubted this is that through my life, now remember, my grandfather told me this story and gave me this information when I was a small child. And then I was watching modern society in school and out there, and the degree to which people have attempted to not see the truth about this is just extraordinary. Like, we had a science called uniformitarianism for like 200 years that basically was just saying that everything that happened in the past was slow and gradual and nothing to worry about. And then gradually, catastrophic theory, especially through Velikovsky, started to penetrate the modern mind in the 1950s. And at this point, it is now accepted scientific fact that this cataclysm occurred. And people have different versions of it. You'll find people saying it's 1,000 years here, 1,000 years there. But the story that everybody is pulling together is basically the same story. We are a multi-traumatized species. And where I'm coming from, it's my book is called Awakening the Planetary Mind, is that I believe that if we can remember what happened to us, we can recover. I think that if we don't know what happened to us, we'll never recover from this.
Mm-hmm. And do you think by having authors like yourself and others describe these catastrophic event or events that it kind of releases that the trauma, or at least gives it a way to be expressed?
What it does is it reverberates through a person's consciousness and through their brain and through their body, and then they go through phases of healing in relationship to it. And that's what the whole modern healing movement is all about, since the 1970s especially.
Okay, and So what you're saying is just people still having fears that another catastrophe is going to happen. Like, I mean, there's a lot of language right now about asteroids that keep coming close to hitting Earth, and how the American military is developing anti asteroid weaponry and things like that. I mean, do you think that brings up the whole phobia?
I think that it's, I think it's the even more important thing to recognize is that the current political system, especially in the United States, is very, very strongly influenced by Christian fundamentalists. And Christian fundamentalists, and I don't want anybody to hear this in a negative way at all, but Christian fundamentalists believe that the world is coming to an end. They admit it. They're waiting for it to happen. And the problem with that is that that might be okay for somebody who just wants to explore religious life, but that's not okay in politics. Politics is about running systems and countries and resources in order to help humankind. And I actually think, Cliff, I don't think anybody should be in office who's a fundamentalist Christian because of that issue. Because what I'm saying is they haven't processed their trauma yet, and they're projecting their trauma on other people, and that's okay to do that in church, but it's not okay to do it when you're trying to run a country.
Okay, yes. That's kind of scary, actually. So let's talk about some methods of healing. So we're aware that this event happened. We are conscious or unconsciously aware that we have a racial memory of these events. What are the techniques? How do we clear this out in preparation for the future? What do we do?
Yeah, it's a twofold thing. First of all, in terms of healing, I find with hidden trauma that one of the most effective treatments seems to be body work. And so we have this huge explosion of body work because this memory is like in the cells. And I've had just hundreds of stories from healers who have had clients on the table who access the memory right on the table. And it's very powerful. It's powerful stuff when it happens. And a lot of therapists read my work in order to understand what might be going on with people. But let's switch to the more positive side, which is the excitement over getting our story back. See, our story was taken away from us. And, you know, the whole story of the pre-diluvial civilization, the whole story of all the incredible things that have happened on this planet were basically taken away. Like if anybody mentioned the word Atlantis in a university 20 years ago, they would immediately get kicked out of their job. That's fortunately ending. And so as we recover our story, then we start to realize that even though we did go through a trauma, and even though it did affect us very severely at one time, we're capable of evolving and developing into human beings who can be in synchronicity with the planet. And see, that's the most... So this whole awakening that we're in the middle of, and what you're doing on your show, this recovery of our story, is just... you notice people just get really excited. They just reread because they're so excited by the story. Well, the story is wonderful. The story of evolution is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what you're saying is by just acknowledging there was an event, which is now verified through science, a catastrophe, that's the beginning form of healing?
What
you're saying?
That's the first step, first big step.
That's the first step. And then digging a little deeper would be body work. But what other things? Would you say someone practicing quiet time in a form of a meditation begins to release it? What are some other ways that our listeners might
Another great way is you notice how most people are very, very, this is a very difficult passage that we're in the middle of right now because we're really coming through this core awakening now, especially 2012 to 2015. And people are saying to me constantly how soothing it is to be in nature. And so I think getting into nature and relating to nature is very important. And then let's remember another thing. The whole sacred site system, not the whole system, but a huge amount of the sacred site system still exists on this planet. And since about the 1850s, our archaeologists and anthropologists have been restoring the sacred site system. Like in Mexico, for example, have you ever seen the difference between a pyramid site that's been restored and then one that's under all the jungle growth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can't tune into it. And so we're in the middle of this wonderful rebuilding of the sacred site system, and people are going there and tuning in and waking up. And so that part of the awakening can be very, very therapeutic for some people. I did that. I taught at sacred sites for about 25 years just to be with people while they woke up those memories of the earth, because this is our natural attunement with our planet, which we must get back.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything people can do in their home that is more simplified way to get in touch with that phobia and identify it and then somehow release it?
A lot of people have altars and different ways of working with sacred energy, and I think that can be really, really helpful. And I think for most people, I'd like to say this, for most people, the recovery of this memory has come through the study of the various writers and teachers who have brought the memory back, like I'm only one example of many. And so for many people, a lot of the awakening comes just by being with the book and coming across a fact or coming across an idea and saying, yes, I know that's right. Because we need to remember that this whole memory bank still exists within us, our bodies and our minds. And as this information comes back to us, we're all kind of reweaving a dream of being in connection with Earth again.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that the United States of America has not released their trauma? We're very militaristic.
I think the so-called democracy in the United States is the biggest prison on the planet. And I say that with compassion, you know, because it's just sad, and people have to realize that they're locked into a great big frequency range, and got to watch out for listening to all the, you know, for example, some of the events that have occurred recently, the really traumatic events. Up until about 100 years ago, if some event was happening all the way across the planet, you wouldn't even know about it. But now what's happened is people are just being bombarded with one cataclysmic event after another, which by the way, Cliff, I think that's also awakening ancient memory. It's kind of a funny twist where the government and the media do it in order to keep you from waking up, and yet the events themselves, like the Oso mudslide up here in Washington State, it just took me right back to the memory of 11,500 years ago when I almost got caught in a mudslide.
So that's funny that you would say that. So the news, being what it is, always reports on the negative, horrific events as news. And you're saying that can trigger someone into kind of going back to that catastrophic event, and maybe it's a form of cleansing. They don't know it.
Yeah, that's why I think knowledge is so important right now, because the more you see how this is working, then the more you're able to handle it without just being severely traumatized by it. Because it's hard not to be traumatized by some of the things that are happening.
Yeah,
you have to be really careful about that. You know.
Right. Let's look to the future now. What have you discovered? Of course, you're an astrologer, so you're always kind of looking at the potential of the future. In the subtitle of your book is Beyond the Trauma of the Past to a New Era of Creativity. What does that mean? Tell us what that means.
Well, first of all, obviously, I believe that if we wake up and remember our story, that it is of immense importance to us, the negative and positive aspects of our story. But another thing that we have to put into the hopper right here is we're in the middle of a series of cycles on this planet. And the global elite tries to make it look like human beings are causing all the problems and causing global warming. And this is kind of like the people who say that Atlantis got blown up by a big crystal. They're trying to make it look like humans blew up Atlantis. Humans didn't blow up Atlantis. Fragments from the Vela supernova came flying through the solar system and destabilized our planet. That's what happened. And the same thing is the case now. What's going on in the planet right now is we are in the middle of a major cyclical change. And we're going through that change, and I think we're going back to, or forward, sorry to say back or forward, we're moving into a range where we're going to move back into being in synchronicity with our consciousness, with our planet. And so one of the things that goes on with some of the earth changes that we're experiencing is the earth changes themselves are waking people up, because they're beginning to really feel the earth and really feel the planet. And I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, because this is not easy, but we are definitely in the middle of a series of changes on the planet that are akin to the level of changes that occurred 11,500 years ago. And what I said in my work consistently is, back then it was physical, this time it's emotional. And I don't think there's a single person listening to this show who won't admit that emotional change is harder than physical change.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're going through
we're
going through an emotional breakthrough here, and it's much harder than a physical breakthrough. It's incredibly difficult to go through an emotional breakthrough. So I think that's what's happening, is the remembering, and the remembering of our story is just a very powerful experience. And the thing that would be a shame for anybody would be to not have a clue about what's going on. And I've got a whole lot of people I know who don't have a clue, including some of my close relatives. They just won't listen. And nothing I can do about that, if you know what I mean. But it's definitely easier to go through this if you have some idea what might be actually going on.
Okay. So we go through the physical, emotional, and spiritual change. Then what do you think is, when we clear that out, had our catharsis, what do we look forward to? What do you see as some of these positives to look forward to?
Yeah, I actually think that we're going back into this synchronicity with the heart of the planet. And I don't know how many of us are going to be here. I have no idea. But I do think that we're going into a whole new level of consciousness. And when we get there, and I think this is coming along quite rapidly, really, I think we're going to change the way we handle our lives and the way we handle the planet. And specifically, I think people are going to start to realize that using the light bulbs the government tells them to use isn't really the point. Let's take a look at how the military is wasting the planet. In other words, it's a distraction away all the time from the real destructive forces. And I think people waking up are going to find a way to take an issue with those forces.
But, I mean, we're especially in America, the United States, the Internet is such a dominant part of our society now. I mean, it's everywhere. Do you see the Internet being kind of melded with the natural world that you're saying that we need to reconnect with? Or is that not a possibility? Do you see a breakdown in that technological...
I think the Internet is akin to the megalithic communication system or the global maritime civilization communication. But the point is, we have to fight to keep the Internet what we want it to be, which is for all of us to be connected into oneness on our planet. And that's the big struggle right now, isn't it? Look what goes on with Snowden. This is the big fight right now. We don't need the military to keep documents and run wars, the Internet to be used for that. We need the Internet as a communication system between humans in relationship to the planet.
So you see it as a benefit rather than as a negative?
I have to believe that it's a benefit, because if you observe evolution, whenever some kind of big new change came in, everybody thought it was negative, but it usually was the key to getting to the next step.
Interesting. When it comes to the healing process, what would you say is the effects of someone who doesn't realize there was a catastrophe, a serious issue with the earth, and refuses to kind of acknowledge it? What happens to that person if they don't clear this trauma?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Okay, let's take a kid who's starting to lose it, and he or she is 17 years old and has been on really bad media too much, and they're really losing it. And they start having delusions, and they start thinking about killing and destroying. And where there's a lot of that going on right now, isn't there? Well, what if that kid realized that ancient trauma is waking up and being processed, and what if that kid could seek help? with these tremendously difficult forces that are coming. And this is especially affecting adolescents, because adolescents are always the most affected by energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just one example. I could think of a lot of examples. But mm-hmm. I just think that there's only one way out now, and that's to know the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's not really discussed in mainstream news. Occasionally, like I say, we get an asteroid scare. There is a lot of talk about, I just read an article the other day that in a time frame in April, there were more earthquakes around the world than any time in, I don't know if it was recorded history, but since recording has been done. And that's a fascinating phenomenon to have that many. In fact, they graphed it. It was within a 24-hour period, I believe.
I know. I'm aware of it. And see, these are the signs that we're in the middle of a cyclical shift. In other words, we're in the middle of a change on the planet that has to do with the solar system itself and actually the galaxy. Because all of the other, by the way, speaking of global warming and methane and all that, all the other planets in the solar system are having the same types of effects in their atmosphere. In other words, this mm-hmm. is the solar system and the galaxy and not just Earth. And so so what the global elite does is it tries to convince people that they're doing something wrong. And it keeps them from realizing that the larger situation is what we need to look at.
The larger situation being the control of the masses?
People need to start realizing there is a major cyclical shift going on right now. Because it's speaking of the poles melting and the seas rising and all that, the more we as a culture can understand how this planet actually works in relationship to the solar system and the galaxy, then the more we're going to have an understanding of what's happening in our reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. I want to take a couple of questions here, and then we need to conclude. Here's a question from Sandy in San Diego. She says, is there a collective conscious unconscious that is affecting the world? I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, is the fourth dimension. We're in the third dimension, linear space and time, solid world. And then right above us, the next dimension above us, the fourth dimension, is the collective mind. It's the collective of all the thoughts and feelings of all humans. It's not dogs. Dogs don't sit at the door and worry about the Iraq War, if you know what I mean. This is human, mental culture. And so there definitely is a collective consciousness that affects us, and the global elite has become experts at manipulating. That's what the media does, is the media just dishes that dimension out day after day after day, and distracting and confusing people. We live in 3D, you know, we live in bodies in linear space and time. We don't live in that dimension of the collective mind. But for people who are soaked in media, in a sense, they live in that dimension.
Do you believe that we're moving into a newer dimension? I mean, we're 3D, but there's levels of consciousness that exceed 3D. Where do you think we're going?
This is what Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is about. And I think what we're doing right now is we are waking up to the alchemical dimensional mind that I think we possessed fully before the cataclysm, and I think we had much more of that consciousness until about 5,000 years ago. And I think what's happening is we're waking up and starting to access those higher fields and higher dimensions, which is a fairly complex topic, but I think that's exactly what's going on.
I believe that the ancient Maya actually had access to those dimensions. What is your belief in there on that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then Alchemy of Nine Dimensions gets into how each dimension has a stellar realm to it, like Orion or Sirius or the Pleiades or whatever, galactic center.
Mm-hmm.
And as we wake up into this mentality, this connection with these higher levels, then what happens is we start reading Egyptology or Mayan theology or whatever, and you start noticing that everything has something to do with being connected with realms beyond this dimension. And I just reviewed a totally incredible book about that called The Dimensional Ecology of the Omniverse by Alfred Weber, where Alfred Weber has actually really written about how we connect with those levels in modern times. And we know how the Egyptians did it, and we know how the Mayans did it and the Vedic people. But now we're finding a whole new way of waking up.
Wow. The last question I have for you, what do you see a positive future? What is your prognosis on the future?
I'm probably about the most optimistic person you could ever talk to. I actually am, and considering the information that I've had, you know, in my brain for 60 plus years, that's really saying something, to tell you the truth. There isn't any terrible.
Well, I ask you this. And let me just preface what I'm going to ask you again. We had Michael Cremo on the show, and he says that it's going to get worse, much worse, and then it's going to get horrible, and then we may see the light. And of course, he's using the yugas to kind of, but I'm not sure he's using them correctly. But anyhow, he foretells some unhappy times.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
Well, the reason I brought up this issue of this book, Dimensional Ecology of the Omniverse, is that this author does a great job of pointing out that we don't have to be in bodies in order to be part of the universal development. And the way I look at this is we're living in a universe and we're living in a galaxy which is going through a tremendous evolutionary push right now. And it may get worse. I wouldn't disagree with Michael Cremo that it might get worse. It certainly looks like it's going to get worse. In fact, on my own website, I post articles about the Uranus-Pluto squares because that's the big astrological influence right now. And months ago, I said that whatever was going on the planet between March 15th of this year and about mid-May was going to give a lot of indication of how things were going to be for quite a few years. Now, if you look at the way it's been the last couple of months, that doesn't make you feel very good when you hear that. And so what do you do? Well, you've got to get better and better about survival and taking care of yourself and growing your own food. People are going to have to do a lot of things that they never expected to do during this period of time. But I think what's important to realize is that we are much, much more than what we are right here in this lifetime on this planet. And I always keep that in mind, you know, because like if I end up in Oso at the wrong time and get rolled under the mud, well, all I'm going to do is, I was close to it, actually, all I'm going to do is go out of body, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know it might not feel like it's okay to a lot of people, but it's okay with me.
The book is called Awakening the Planetary Mind Beyond the Trauma of the Past to a New Era of Creativity. Barbara Hand-Clough. Barbara, can you tell us what's coming up for you? I know you mentioned that you stopped doing quite a bit of, you used to do seminars all over the place throughout the United States, throughout the world probably. You have a new book coming up. What can you tell us a little bit about what's happening?
Well, I'm not going to be out there much, but I do have some good news. What I did with this moment in time, which I think is very difficult for all of us, I decided to do what I wanted to do most in the world. I just decided, like, maybe I'm not going to be here, so what do I really want to do? And so I wrote a novel called Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. And that will be coming out sometime this fall or early winter, and readers are really excited about it. And I would advise everybody listening that the other side of everything we're talking about is this is an incredibly creative time. It's a very powerful time. And the thing to do is just decide, what do I really care about, and then just do that.
Wow. People can read about your work. What's your website? What's the address again?
Yeah, it's handclough2012.com, and what's important is what I'm doing on the website is I'm posting free articles all the time in relationship to the Uranus-Pluto squares. This is the 2012 through 2015 transits, and giving a lot of advice on how to handle this energy, because this is just intense.
Right. I'm going to go ahead and post that up on the Facebook page, and I'll also put it up on the Blog Talk Radio. Barbara, it's been a pleasure.
It was great to reconnect with you, and thank you for providing this insight. And
well,
fantastic
you.
Subject.
And thank you for the support.
Right. All right. That's it for our show. And next week, we will have Xavier Hayes talking about aliens in Egypt. So that's something to look forward to. Thank you.